Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Coach Podcast. Since 2010, the most listened to show in the nonprofit sector, dedicated to helping your charity succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to fundraising success, and practical nonprofit management advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach Podcast with Ted Hart is the perfect landing point to learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is, without a doubt, one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, his books range from successful online fundraising to expert nonprofit management. Guests on the Nonprofit Podcast are leaders in their field who share their insider tips and trade secrets in a conversational style both the experienced and novice will benefit from. Ted and his guests help you and your organization move to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. After the show, you can find all of our podcasts at tedhart.com, on iTunes, and now just say, Alexa, play Nonprofit Coach on TuneIn. Now, welcome the host of the Nonprofit Coach Podcast, Ted Hart.
And here we are back to the holidays. And of course, there's no better way to get prepared for the year ahead and to celebrate our holiday show than with our very good friend, Kay Sprinkle Grace. And this is such an important topic and such an important time, I guess, in philanthropy with COVID not fading away, but coming back all over the world. It is easy to feel discouraged. It is easy to feel the challenge. And so we have the right person for you here today. I'm the Nonprofit Coach. Kay Sprinkle Grace is here to share with you everything you need to know to succeed in 2022. Kay, thank you for your time and welcome back here to the Nonprofit Coach.
Thank you, Ted. I'm so excited to be back. This is one of my favorite days of the year.
Well, thank you. Well, it is ours as well. And as you know, over the years, you've become one of the most popular voices here on the Nonprofit Coach. And the annual holiday show is one that our producer, Diane Peake, always makes sure gets scheduled. For exactly this reason, Kay, people have really grown to rely on you as sort of, you know, looking forward to the next year, sort of taking a look back at what we've accomplished and giving those, you know, that expert sage advice on what are the things you should be focusing on, what are the things that you can do or need to do to succeed. But, you know, I want to start off with, you know, the obvious here, Kay, and that is, you know, we've spent this last year, this year, 2021, hoping that we would see COVID-19 in the rearview mirror or at least soon to be departing our everyday. You know, all over Europe, all over Africa, certainly here on the East Coast, they're seeing a new wave of Omicron variant of COVID. And boy, this, you know, 2 years in almost can really sap people of their energy. And for a lot of organizations, staying resilient is a very difficult thing to do. So let's start off there with, you know, with your sort of, you know, broad global view. What's the state of philanthropy right now as we start thinking about how to succeed in the year ahead?
Well, Dickens said it all, you know, when he said it is the best of times, it is the worst of times. Yes, the holidays are on us once again, and this year we have a vaccine. Last year we did not, and we were quite excited last year. We thought, wow, it's going to be a great year. And I want to emphasize, Ted, that it was a very good year in terms of nonprofits realizing that they could do it. And it was, you know, we were so sure that the worry, the sadness would be over in about 6 months. Well, how did that work out? Not as well as we thought. But I think instead of feeling discouraged, I think our organizations met the challenge and they began delivering everything from counseling to concerts to church services virtually. And they did it faster than we could believe. I'm on the board of our Grace Cathedral here in San Francisco. And a four-year plan for going virtual with church services was done in 2 months. 2 months. Everything was up and running. The orchestra on the board of which I serve, did 115 virtual performances, including the music director who lives in Amsterdam and, of course, was confined to Amsterdam, called Live from Amsterdam. When he came on at who knows what hours, you know, of the day or night in Amsterdam, to make sure that the music was there, to make sure, in the case of Grace Cathedral, that the services were there. And so what we did, Ted, is what is so exciting, and that is we saw a problem and we solved it. And we didn't solve the problem of COVID because unless that you were a medical organization assigned to this, that wasn't your responsibility. But what was your responsibility was to make sure that the people you serve were served and that the people whose lives you enriched with your arts and culture continued to be enriched and that you held out hope. And all the time we were checking out our bottom line, with exhausting regularity. But many of our donors realized financial gains as never before. And the leaders of many of the donor advice funds, such as you and others, I'm blessed to be in the arena of Silicon Valley Community Foundation, whose leader just urged her donor advice fund holders to give as their assets grew. And I have to tell you that the amount of funding that went into essential services, the unhoused, food insecurity was simply remarkable. And on the, you know, on the downside of this, of course, the whole thing revealed the enormous fissures and tears in our social fabric. So we have new problems to solve. And we not only have the problems of that were existing, but we have new problems to solve. And the way we did it during the height of the pandemic was that we came together. And so if and when this storm passes, are we going to return to the way we were, where we're each kind of doing our little corner of the world and we're taking care of our people? I hope not. Because I feel that we have an opportunity here to be even more effective than we've ever been. Because I think we have learned how to draw on our resources, even when it meant cutting staff, even when it meant looking to new sources. We were able to keep up the level of investment in our community that is expected from us. And you know, Ted, when people say, oh, I can't wait to get back to normal, my answer is, gee, I hope not. Because I don't think normal is really where we want to be, the old normal. I think what
not the old normal. I mean, certainly a lot of folks we're seeing, as you mentioned, you know, more food insecurity, you know, shelter problems for the unhoused, and certainly, you know, even having a bed at a place that, you know, you're also dealing with COVID. Issues, and a lot of charities, of course, are seeing, you know, some communities are seeing former donors needing the services of food pantries, and of course we've got, you know, diversity and racism that's just been sort of, as you mentioned, laid bare. We knew it was there, but not quite in as stark terms in terms of the number of communities that have really, really been harmed and people who have lost so much, and of course our social sector. You know, is that fabric that creates the social safety net that so many communities rely upon, and these charities are stressed. As you said, some have been able to pivot in some in remarkable ways, but I think some of the smaller charities that the smaller communities rely upon are some of the ones that have been hurt the most. How do we see the future for even the smallest nonprofits amongst us?
Well, you've heard me say this before, and at the risk of sounding dreadfully draconian, I think it's time that we came together as communities with similar service providers around the same table. And I've been very reliant on a quotation from Sister Mary Claire, an Irish nun who served in the Crimea with Florence Nightingale, who apparently said Things that are unraveling cannot be patched. We need to build the loom on which the next pattern can be woven. I think we have to become new loom builders. I think that post-pandemic, when we begin to see the easing, before we scramble back into our offices and get our people back and renew what we're doing, I think we need to look at the full landscape. So, I mean, you live in a community that has, you know, a great number of unhoused. I live in a community. I mean, San Francisco is known for its unhoused people. We need to sit down at the table with all the people who care about that and say, how can we get this done? And Ted, at the risk of hurting the feelings of small organizations, is there a larger organization doing your same kind of work, maybe related, with whom you could team? I always go back to what happened in New Orleans after Katrina. And at the time of Katrina, there were 7 organizations working with people with HIV and AIDS. And it was broken into food services, to research, you know, the usual array. After Katrina, when the population of New Orleans was down by a third, and when everything was so damaged, the HIV/AIDS epidemic, which was still pretty strong in New Orleans, did not cease. And the head of the organization called No AIDS, as in New Orleans AIDS, convened the other 6 organizations and said, let's look at what we can do together. And they came together, and it was efficient, it was remarkable, it had a high impact. And I think that what we do when we have a proliferation of organizations that are all dealing with the same issue, I think that we confuse our donors. Because, and you know this about me, Ted, is that I'm the Hank Rosso School of Mission, which is that mission isn't what you do, it's why you do what you do. And the why is why we come together around the table and say, how are we going to solve the problem of housing in our community? How are we going to solve the problem of food insecurity? How are we going to solve the problem of childcare in our community? And convene the corporations, the associations, the nonprofits, the local governments, and let's work on this together. And that is my, you know, hope for this time, you know, after we have come through this increasingly dreadful time. And I want to be part of the loom builders. I want to see what that next pattern is going to be, because here's the thing, is that I so believe that we have the experience, the expertise, the reputation, and the trust to be problem solvers. And I don't think we have exercised that as much as we could. And Ann Wahlstad, who regrettably is stepping down from Board Source, I just think she is such an inspiring leader. And she came out with an article in the Stanford Social Innovation Review last summer that just made my head spin. It was so on point. And she talked about the difference between organizations that are purpose-driven and organizations that are organization-driven. And purpose-driven means that the way you organize, the way you operate, the way you put your resources into the community is all about the purpose. And of course, yes, you have to keep your organization strong, but it should never overwhelm your purpose. And I see now that Rick Moyers, who used to be with Board Source and urged me to write my first book, Ted, called Beyond Fundraising, is going to publish a book on this.
A very successful book.
What?
A very successful book.
Yes, yes, a very successful book. And Rick Moyers is going to be issuing a book on this whole idea of purpose-driven. He's on the board at Board Source. So I just feel that we have an opportunity. Oh, wow. I think we could, well, we are always saying, you know, that we want to change the world. Well, you know, we probably could if we came together around the purpose and the problem solving. And I have such respect for IDEO.org and the organizations that do human-centered design. because that's what they're looking at. They're looking at how we can do this. And I honestly feel that there's never been a more mixed bag of possibilities for our country and world. I think we have challenges everywhere we look, but we also have opportunities. We have problems we can solve. And I think that's very exciting.
How can, so going to, from, I mean, wonderful thoughts there. And as you know, we all work towards Build Back Better. That certainly is where the nonprofit sector should be looking. And we know that donors have always played an important role in sort of pushing, prodding, and incentivizing nonprofits to move in a particular direction. Does that take a magic wand to make that happen? Are there practical tools that either donors who are listening or charities who are interacting with their donors can inspire them to come together across organizational lines, is what I'm hearing you say, is that we really need those broader coalitions. We need charities to come together to be efficient, yes, but also to create a common purpose for this Build Back Better. So what does that look
That's
like?
Right.
And how? Give us a starting point.
Well, and add to the Build Back Better, add the Big Bet vision. I think we are vision deficient. I think our vision is often to survive, and particularly during the pandemic. And I'm not convinced that that's a compelling vision for investors. And I don't think it also keeps the PQ, the passion quotient, that we know our boards need in order to be effective. I don't think it keeps them excited either. But I believe that bigger vision, that everything, you know, that we could possibly implement some true change. We could solve problems. The food bank here in San Francisco was in a building campaign to expand its existing facility and build out a facility it had acquired in a county just north of us, up in Marin County. And when the pandemic hit, of course, we pulled back, you know, I mean, of course, from the campaign, because everything was about food and you know, serving these people. But we made a pivotal shift in the middle of all that as we looked at the campaign, when we realized that we were only talking about serving the problem of hunger, not solving it. And years ago, Ken Burnett, an esteemed colleague of yours and mine and many people, he pointed out the difference between serving and solving problems. And I think that we need to make that leap to where we are solving the problems. And I think that, you know, if I had a real magic wand, which I don't, but I would say that everything you need to succeed in 2022 depends on your capacity to identify problems and solve them. Big ones, little ones, in your community, in your workplace, in you, and among those you care about, work with, and know. But a bit of a caveat goes with this, Ted, the serenity prayer of Reinhold Niebuhr. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can change, and the wisdom to know the difference. Tilting at windmills is not productive, and neither is showing up for the wrong battle and expecting to win the war. So we have to do interior discernment while making exterior moves to truly solve the problems. And by the way, when we reignited the building campaign for the food bank, we met the goal, and one of our gifts was an $8 million gift, an investment, because the donor saw that we could, in fact, help ultimately solve the problem by having this expanded facility. So I don't have a real magic wand, but what I put together is I've put together 9 things that I think our listeners could do in 2022, and the first word in each of them will spell out magic wand, and I've sent it to Ted, and Ted, you have my permission to share it with people.
We do that.
This is a radio magic wand.
of Radio Magic Wand exactly before you jump into the Radio Magic Wand, because I love this and I love, you know, working it out. So you've got, you know, these nine points that we're going to talk about and share with our listeners today. But help sort of set the stage for this magic wand that you're giving us, this wonderful holiday gift that you're about to give to us. In terms of, you know, back to the Serenity Prayer, the wisdom to know the difference, because there are so many needs that are right in front of many of our charities who are dealing with a very real crisis in many communities. How do you sort of thread that needle of taking resources for the long-term challenge and solution when you have hungry people in front of you, when you have, you know, racial discord in your streets? How do you manage both? Because resources are not infinite.
Well, I think one of the things that we need to get better at during this time is what many successful organizations did during the pandemic. We need to be better listeners. And I think sometimes when we are serving people in our efforts to solve the problem, we jump to conclusions. We decide what the problem is without listening to people. So here's the landscape. We have thousands of organizations, nonprofits, who have worked exhaustingly to help during this pandemic. And many of them now are extremely understaffed. And so the understaffing is something I think needs to be looked at as both a short-term challenge and a long-term problem that should be solved. So I work with an organization that went from 14 employees to 7. And now what they are looking at is, knowing what we now want to do vision-wise relative to our community, and they are partnering with organizations they've never partnered with before, who do we need? So being strategic as you recover in terms of putting your staff together again. Is it the same kind of people doing the same thing, or is it something different? So that's one of them. The second thing is changing your messaging. I find, Ted, that we still talk about our needs instead of our impact. And how many times have you heard me say, people give because we meet needs, not because we have needs? I have looked at direct mail pieces that are going out at the holidays that just simply make me cringe, because it's all about the desperate needs of the organization, and it does not seem to have anything to do with the needs of the people they're serving. And I read these things, and my heart goes out to these organizations, but I want to know, if I invest in them, are they going to continue to focus on what's wrong with them in terms of their desperation, or are they going to tell me about the miracle of a family that gets food from a food pantry that can reopen, or are they going to tell me about a community where they're building tiny houses to give people the dignity of living in shelter? Instead, I hear how they are on the ropes. One letter even said that, we're on the ropes. And we have to change our messaging. We're about positive. Remember that, you know, and this was something that I believed very strongly, particularly in the recession from 2008 to 13, is that people carry two investment portfolios, their financial investment portfolio and their social investment portfolio. During the recession, one got pretty depleted. We know which one it was. But those who had invested in organizations found that they had a high sense of return on what those organizations were doing in the community. Now we have this unusual situation where we have people, many of whom have accrued wealth. But we have organizations that instead of talking about the impact and the needs they're meeting and telling the stories, Ted, we are storytellers. That's what we do well. And I read these letters and not one of them has a story in it, or one, some of them do, the ones I respond to. And I want to know that if I'm going to lift out of my investments that money that accrued during the pandemic, is it going to go someplace where it's going to move the needle towards solving the problem the organization is working on?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost
in the past, prior years, we've talked about, you know, sort of the futility of Chicken Little fundraising. And how that really beats down donors rather than inspiring donors. And I think that's
so true,
that's where you're taking us back to, right?
Yes, because this is about, remember that philanthropy is not about scarcity. It's about abundance. Philanthropy comes from abundance and it creates abundance. We are so fortunate to be committed in our lives to the love of humankind. What does the love of humankind mean? It means that we take care of people, but we can also perhaps, and I think I've shared this story with our listeners before, of when years ago, probably 20 years ago, I was in a little town in Utah, and I was talking about how sometimes your mission changes, but very seldom. You know, usually your purpose is going to be the same throughout your existence. And I said, but one of the exceptions was the fact that March of Dimes, which began as an organization to address children with polio, changed because polio was basically eradicated, and so they turned instead to birth defects. A young woman, probably in her early 20s, raised her hand in the back of the room, and I said, you have a question? And she said, yes. She said, what's polio?
Yeah.
Well, you know, at that moment, I said to her, that is the best question I've ever received in my life. I want to be present when somebody raises her hand and says, what's cancer? What's ALS? What's leukemia? Because polio was a problem that was solved. And so the issues with our unhoused are extraordinary. But what we know when we gather the people around the table, as we are beginning to do here in San Francisco, it's not about housing. It's about how did they get there in the first place, which says that it's all about education. It's all about substance abuse. And it's about having interventions before it gets to that point. It is a deep, deep problem. But with the hope that it could be solved, I think if we came up with the deep, deep solutions, that people would be willing to invest. And we are in a time of abundance in terms of the abundant amount of funding that is out there. But we are still operating from scarcity. We still talk about what we don't have, what is missing, rather than what we have done.
Here's the good news for our listeners, Kay. I just wanted to jump in. We're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, the good news is that they're listening to this podcast today, and you have a holiday gift called the Magic Wand that you're going to share with us and walk through. So everyone, we will be right back in just a couple moments with Kay Sprinkle Grace and your holiday gift for this year.
Have you ever wished you could take back an email you sent to the wrong person? Or have that nagging feeling that your confidential message was forwarded without your consent? Do you sometimes email sensitive data even though you know most email is insecure? And we all have, because we're busy. And because in the world of email, there are no take-backs. Until now. Introducing Virtru, the simple way to send and receive secure email with confidence. Virtru is easy to install and use, and it works with your favorite email programs like Gmail, Outlook, Yahoo, MacMail, and more. When you hit the Send Secure button, your email is encrypted before it leaves your computer or smartphone. And even better, you can revoke a message at any time. You decide whether a message can be forwarded by recipients. You can track where your message is forwarded, and more. Download Virtru today and start sharing with confidence, because everyone deserves digital privacy and security without hassle.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always free and always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com, on iTunes, and now just say, Alexa, play Nonprofit Coach on TuneIn. Now back to the Nonprofit Coach podcast with Ted Hart.
And we're back here with Kay Sprinkle Grace, who has received the Golden Gate Chapter AFP Lifetime Achievement Award and the Fundraising Professional of the Year Award from the AFP Global and the Henry A. Rosso Medal for Lifetime Achievement and Ethical Fundraising from the Lilly School of Family School of Philanthropy. Welcome back here, Kay Sprinkle Grace. You have a year-end holiday gift for all of our listeners today called the Magic Wand, and you're going to walk us through the 9 points of success for 2022. Take it away.
I'm delighted to, and consider it gift wrapped. Consider it gift wrapped. So, Magic Wand, M, you're going to have to come up with more energy and more commitment. And this is the thing that all of us, you know, we go through waves of exhaustion, at least I do. Sometimes I just roll along and I'm so excited and I see the horizon. And then other days I think, nah, you know, it's like, oh, no, you know, not that. But we need more energy, commitment, and joy for our work. I am drinking my coffee this morning, Ted, out of a cup that comes from the Gratitude Institute. And the inscription is, joy is the happiness that doesn't depend on what happens. So joy and gratitude are my two primary values. And when you have joy for your work, it inspires others. And that's how we lead. Because, Ted, if there's ever been a time for leadership in the nonprofit sector, it is now. It is now. Let's show people what we can do, because we truly have love of humankind. So the A is for adaptive leadership. Now, some of you may have run across that in your classes on leadership. And adaptive leadership basically says we need to adapt. We need to evolve. We need to be situation specific. I was mentoring a young woman from Slovenia this morning just before I came on the radio show, and we were talking about this adaptive leadership and some of the things that she's working with in her life. And the thing is that we need to be always evolving. We need to read. You know, take some of your extra time. I did a lot more reading during the pandemic than I've done in a long time, just because I didn't have that commute time. You know what, Ted? If I had a meeting, all I had to do was turn on my Zoom. You know, I didn't have to get in my car and drive somewhere. We need to adjust for the situation and find solutions as we evolve. Any of you familiar with IDEO.org, the human-centered design company? They are phenomenal. They're a model for ideation and for finding the human-centered problem and designing the solution is such a good reminder. And it says it's all about adjustment. So the G in magic is grin and bear it. You know, years ago, there used to be a cartoon in the newspapers, when we still had newspapers and we still read the comic page, and it was called Grin and Bear It, and maybe we should revive it, but this is not going to be easy. We're going to have to, you know, take a deep breath and take the next step and know that that vision that we, that big bet vision, what's a big bet vision? It is that if you bet on us, if you invest in us, we are going to help really solve some of these problems at last. And it is one of the most, so we have to grin and bear it. The I in magic is, no surprise, coming from me, is innovation. Innovation, innovation. You get it? Innovate in everything you do. How you think, how you interact with people, how you dream, and how you strategize. Because guess what? We've found out, haven't we, that the future will not wait for you. The future happens while we're trying to figure out what to do next. So let's innovate. Let's follow that road sign that says, innovate this way. The C is, again, no surprise, is collaborate, cooperate. Yes, partner, merge. Yes, merge. Combine resources, dreams, and ideas with others who serve the same people you do. Your donors will love you for it. And Ted, during the height of the pandemic, I did a remote merger. I have been working for years in a mountain community here in California with an organization that serves teens in that community. And it's not a wealthy community. A lot of these kids live in poverty. Some are homeless. They have amazing programs. And there was an after-school program started by two absolutely wonderful young women, but it was dividing the donors' attention because they were also dealing with homeless youth. They were also dealing with the same population. We did a textbook merger remotely. And let me tell you that that new organization called Bright Futures for Youth, which is the amalgam of these two organizations, is off and running. The donors love it. It is robust. The founders of the other organization have slipped into the new organization in program director roles for their previous entity, which is now a program of Bright Futures for Youth. And the Friendship Club, which was the larger organization, has also been subsumed in Bright Futures for Youth and is run by the executive director of that organization. It is a phenomenal thing, and the donors love it. Their overlap in donors was extraordinary, probably 80% overlap. 80% were giving to both organizations. Now they are giving to this one larger organization. So
how do you get that process started? Because that, you know, I just want to jump in. I want to get through all nine. But I think for a lot of organizations, this is part of the new reality, is joining forces, whether it's collaborate, cooperate, partner, merge, as you said. But it's a new dynamic. It's not the way you've been doing business.
No.
How do you start finding a partner? Where do you start? I mean, if you're convinced that that's part of your future, how do you get that started?
I think it starts when you have the conversations we need to have in our communities. Become a convener. Take the lead. Be a convener of other organizations serving arts, culture, the unhoused, seniors, whatever it is. Get everybody around the table. Get everybody around the table, even the local government, you know, and your supervisors or your city council or whatever it is, and get your largest businesses around the table. And when you begin to have the conversation, what you see are the areas of major overlap. And what they did, Ted, is that they began, these two organizations up in Grass Valley, California, began working together, having that conversation. Was it hard? I think it was at first. And then I followed the leadership of two people I really admire, Deal and Kennedy, who wrote a book once called Corporate Culture. And Corporate Culture identified some of the soft parts of any merger. And then you also, of course, look at the hard parts, which are the finance, the board, the fundraising. And sure, you know, it was like, okay, we can do this. But before that, we had done a design thinking session. We had 92 people from these two communities in Nevada City and Grass Valley who came together in a forum and looked at what the key issues were in that community, you know, at that time. And one of the things that came up was serving the youth because they had an awful lot of high school dropouts, everything else. So this was an evolutionary thing, but it begins with a conversation.
Yeah, so. And with that conversation, you could look to groups that are similar to yours or that you've already collaborated with or that you've had some sort of business with. It's one way to get started, wouldn't you say?
That's right, exactly. And sometimes the relationship is ancillary. So another organization that I worked with and did a merger years ago, they were two conservation organizations. They had different missions, but we found out they were very complementary. And because the resources available to each were scant, but coming together, people recognized that this was a really important organization. One was an environmental education organization, and the other was an actual environmental care organization where they took in wounded, animals. And so the two came together, and of course you can see that for the environmental education, suddenly they had a lab, you know, where the kids could come and really learn about the impact of the environment, and particularly when there was an oil spill and, you know, we ended up with all kinds of sea life that was just, you know, suffocating in the oil. Anyway, and it came together, and it's always a relief to the donor because donors, remember, are motivated by values. Values become issues, and they follow their issues when they invest. But if five organizations come to me around the same issue, where am I going to give, Ted? You know, where am I going to give? Maybe
yeah,
if it came
for
to
the donor, if it's successful, then their money goes farther. It's more impactful. So
totally.
Watching the time, let's make sure
yes,
that we
oh
get
yes.
the entire
But we have to get the wand. We have to get to the wand, Ted.
That's right.
And
exactly.
Actually, the W in wand is exactly what I've been talking about. It's work with your communities to identify the problems and then engage others, corporations, associations, foundations, schools, churches, local government, whatever it takes, and solve the issues together in a way that rallies people so completely that they are elated by what they have created. I mean, it's amazing, particularly to see the one working so beautifully that we did last summer. Number seven is about you, about all of you listening. The A is allocate time for you. Try not to succumb again to the rigorous pace that did not get us far. Build in reflection time, self-care time, and time to dream. Only then will the solutions become clear and will you have the energy to implement them. Eight is the end of wand. Never.
Before we go on to that, I just want to point out, because I think this is part of what you're bringing to the surface here is, what some people are referring to as the shadow pandemic of mental health. And putting that front and center, not just for yourself, but for your staff, your family, and your community.
Well, and we know that mental health is going to be the post-pandemic surge, and it is already. It is just an alarming thing, but you can take care of yourself a lot better. I don't know about you, but I wrote a book I've been planning, not a professional book. It's a memoir about my father and World War II, and a 350-page manuscript. I didn't have time to write that when I was on airplanes all the time. And so the thing is, it's the self-care. It is saying, what do I need to do to make sure that I have the energy to solve these problems? Eight, the N in wand, never give up hope. Hope is what keeps us getting up each morning and moving through the day. Hope is born out when the problems we are working to solve begin to move towards solution. Hope is what you and I have for our communities and our world. It is why we do what we do, Why else would we do what we do if we did not have the hope that we can solve these problems, that we can give comfort and we can give assistance to people who are in need of our help? And the D in wand is demonstrate every day your vision, purpose, mission, values, and integrity as you coalesce your community in its quest to come out of the vast medical, social, economic, mental health, and other issues of this pandemic. And I'd just like to wrap up my comments, Ted, with these words from Haruki Murakami. And once the storm is over, you won't remember how you made it through, how you managed to survive. You won't even be sure whether the storm is really over. But one thing is certain. When you come out of the storm, you won't be the same person who walked in. That's what this storm's all about. Thank you, Ted, and have a Merry Christmas season and a very successful 2022. I hope this magic wand will help your listeners.
Well, it's a great way to remember each of the letters and to reflect back on what you've given us today. I wanted to, before, we've got a couple minutes left here, I did want to bring up another point that you have often raised. That I think, sort of provides a backdrop to much of what you shared with us today. And that's, can you share with our listeners your concept of the passion quotient?
Ah, yes. So years ago, Ted, it was a very long time ago now, I created this program called AAA, Ambassador, Advocate, and Asker, which is how I see boards operating, so why not systematize it, right? Where everyone's an ambassador, and some people are also advocates, and some people are also askers. And people can be one, two, or three of these things, but they can't be any, they can't opt out. If you don't want to be an ambassador, you shouldn't be on a board. So as the program has spread with hundreds and hundreds of organizations using it, some succeeded and some did not, I am sorry to say. And what I found was that the reason that the ones that did not succeed failed was because the board lacked a PQ, the passion quotient. And the passion quotient is the motivator. It is the excitement, and it is the confidence, and that is the big issue, the confidence that they have in the organization and its leadership and the sense of engagement that they have. The more engaged I am, the more passionate I am, and that's in our human relationships as well as our professional relationships, whether as staff or board. When I feel that I am a part of a big vision and I play an instrumental role in helping us, and remember, the vision for your organization is how you imagine your community can be if you are successful at what you do. So when you engage people in your success, then you increase their passion. And when you give them the feedback that they need, that thank you, that gratitude, we're terrible stewards of our donors. We're worse stewards of our board members. I don't know what we think, but all board members are major donors. They may not give a major gift, but they give other gifts. They give us time and they give us their talent. And if their treasure is limited, we still should engage them and thank them. But we rush on to the next thing because we live in a very, very pressured space in the nonprofit world. The needs are always out there for us to meet. So the passion quotient right now in most boards, Ted, is pretty low. The PQ is reading pretty low on any test. Boards have not been together. Many of them have not seen each other on. I'm working with a board right now that has recruited four board members, you know, during the pandemic who have never even met in person, most of the people on the board. Another board I'm on, we have been having Jeffersonian dinners with our board members, with the dean. This is the Grace Cathedral, and the dean of the cathedral, and he is just beginning to roll out his vision for post-pandemic and, frankly, for the next 100 years. We're having trustee dinners. They're social. There's no more than 10 or 12 people around the table. The PQ will begin to rise when we are together again. But until we are together again, then what we need to do is make sure that we reach out personally to our board, to our major donors, that we call them, that we find a way to drop something off during this holiday season, maybe drop something at their door if they're not wanting to see people. We have to be deliberate, because the PQ ultimately is what determines whether your board will be transformed into that muscular machine that you need in order to truly solve the problems in your community.
I think this, in the final moments that we have, if you don't mind, I'd like to draw you back for our listeners just to benefit from, you have a top five fundraising tips to help manage donor relations. And of course, that's the underpinning of the magic wand as we go into 2022. Could you just quickly walk us through your top five fundraising tips, because number three actually is about engaging your board. So
Well, the first one is one I just mentioned, to call your donors. Just call them. I mean, they want to hear from you. And now with this surge that we're having with Omicron, people have canceled trips. They're feeling a little bit grim because they're not going to see family. Reach out to your donors, because they are your family. The second one is focus on stewardship. And I said we are not good stewards. No, we're not. We don't take care of our donors the way we should. We take them for granted. And particularly donors that don't give a whole lot. And this is one of the biggest mistakes we make as a profession. We do not take care of donors from the moment they give, from, as we used to say in our Stanford planning, from the point of entry to the point of exit. We need to take care of our donors from that first gift to the planned gift. They are our investors. They are our family, and we need to look after them. Engage your board. As you begin to think of how you might partner with other organizations, you're going to have to work with your board on this. I would start socializing this idea with your board. I would start with maybe there's a partner that you're working with already, another organization. I'd emphasize that partnership. I would emphasize feedback I got about that partnership, how one of your donors wrote in and said, oh, my gosh, I see that you partnered with, XYZ organization. I've been a longtime supporter of theirs as well. So glad to see you working together. This does not come automatically. You've got to really socialize it with your board, engage them, and right now find ways, if you can, to bring your board together, if not in full group, in a small group, or just reach out to them the way you're doing your donors. The virtual event, I think most of us have decided that some virtual will continue. We're rolling out a cultivation plan to move forward on a campaign that I'm working on, and we're having both virtual and actual and in-person cultivation events. For some people, it's just easier. Other people right now are wanting to stay safe. So we can't – hybrid, I think, is a big problem, and I don't think we've worked out the technology on that, of having people at a table while other people are up on a screen. We do it. It's not the best. I did a workshop the other evening, a couple of weeks ago, and it was hard, because there were four people up on the screen and the rest were in the room, and I had to, I felt like one of those bobblehead dolls in the car, My head was swinging back and forth, so I was not ignoring them. And the last one is to make communication personal. I don't know how we forgot, Ted, that one of the glories of you know, technology was that we could personalize things. And yet I hear now people saying, oh, yeah, we're just sending out this email blast. I'm thinking, why are you sending an email blast when you could segment this, when you could so tailor this that people would know that you know who they are? And when we were ramping up for the major giving initiative for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting in 2005, and they did a huge market study, and they interviewed people who had stopped giving to public media, and they asked the question, what would it take to get you back as a member of your station? And this one woman said it all. She said they'd have to show me that they know me. And that became our mantra for the Major Gifts Program for public media. And, yeah, how do we show people that we know them? Well, it's not by sending an email that's probably going to, you know, 5,000 other people without any personalization. Master the surprise email, the one where you take a certain subset of your donors who support a particular program, and you send them an update, and then you're showing them that you know them. So those are my five top tips, along with the magic wand, should be a great formula, right?
Well, absolutely. But also, you know, hey, per usual, you come on the show bearing gifts, gifts of wisdom, gifts of insight, and also, you know, gifts of inspiration to help everyone who is working hard, working for organizations who, you know, are desperately trying to find new levels of resilience. And I love that you've woven into the magic wand, you know, time for all of us, because as we know, or, you know, we're all learning, you know, we don't give enough time for mental health, for our own strengths. But I think increasingly professionals are beginning to understand that, you know, by not taking the time and keeping yourself strong, you can't be strong for others, and particularly those who rely on you. So it's part of being a professional is to take that time off and to really use that time to rejuvenate, to rest, to relax, and to come back, you know, ready to really take on the challenges that all of our organizations are taking on. So, Kay Sprinkle Grace, thank you again. Thank you to our producer, Diane Peake, who always finds a way to get you back on this holiday show.
And is I cannot tell her no.
I cannot tell her. Well, I'm glad of that, and we both know how kind she is and her persuasion. But the show has become so important to a lot of our listeners in terms of, you know, sort of where can they put the focus and how can they take these concepts forward and really make them useful for their communities. So everyone, gift from Kay Sprinkle Grace, you can unwrap that gift now. Magic wand is yours. Let's go forward and let's really make 2022 very successful for all of our listeners. And Kay, you have a terrific, wonderful holiday season.
Thank you, Ted. You too. Bye-bye.
Stay safe, everyone. Bye now.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Podcast with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcasts at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.